Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick. This episode, we'll be talking to my co-host, Stephan Postuma, about the ins and outs of publishing regional cookbooks. Welcome to this show, Food Fight Podcast, with my co-host and today's guest, Stephan Postuma from Quicksand Food.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I am, as always, Simon Evans, the other half.
Good to be here, Simon. Good to be in the chair.
Yeah, it's a bit of a switch around today. I'll be taking on host responsibilities and seeing how I go. Nice to change it up a bit.
I think so. You need to learn this.
Give it a whirl. You've got to learn. So before we go any further, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land we're on, the Wadi Wadi people, the Darawa Nation, and pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All right. Let's go.
I'm in the hot seat. It feels weird to not be introducing the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's like we're not driving and someone else is.
So I'm going to try to let you ask most of the questions, but I guess this chat is a little bit overdue because we always talk about how one day we're going to talk about what I do on this podcast. And we've probably been talking about that since it was the Gong Show and we were talking with Andy, and it's like, when are we going to actually talk about what I do and publishing cookbooks? Because that's what I've essentially been doing for most of the last at least 5 years, but I've actually been doing it since 2008.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of stuff that I don't even know or ins and outs of publishing and things you've done, because you just kind of gloss over things sometimes, especially when you've been friends for a little while.
You just don't even ask me, mate. No one even asks me.
No one even cares. It's always about your chefs. About your fucking chefs.
It's got to make them about themselves all the time. Oh, I've got this new dish on the menu. Cured fucking kingfish.
So tell us, give us an outline fairly briefly about Quicksand Food and what the main part of that is.
Like what it is.
Yeah. Just so someone who doesn't even know what you do.
Like, I haven't published a new cookbook for a while, but essentially Quicksand Food is an independent regional cookbook publisher run by me, and I contract people in to help me with publications, and it's all independent. So most of the cookbooks that are on the shelves these days and most of the books that are out there are from large publishing houses that dominate the industry, and then there's some independent publishers, and it's notoriously difficult to make money as an independent publisher. So I sort of, since 2013 was the first time I was fully in charge of a book. 2008 was the first time I was involved in the publication of a book. And 2015 was when I started doing Quicksand publishing full time. And I make independent regional cookbooks. We go around and talk to chefs and producers and get them to contribute recipes and take photos and all these things, and essentially just make these books that showcase food culture in different regions of New South Wales. And so far, we've covered Canberra, the Illawarra, the South Coast and the Southern Islands.
Amazing. So that's actually how you and I met, was when Stephan was doing the Illawarra cookbook, which is probably what most people in Wollongong would know Steph for. So Steph approached us at Kavo to be involved, and now here we are today. So mainly it's always regional areas you focus on? And was that a decision from the start? Was the company, were you set up with a goal to do that? Like, how did you actually start with the first book?
Yeah, so like the history of Quicksand is like a long story, really, because it all started with my mum. My mum published the very, very first book in the Quicksand portfolio.
That was the Capital
Cookbook 1. So number 1. As a background, my mum, her name was Zorana Grbic. That's my Serbian side. She owned businesses in Canberra. She had 5 cafes / gourmet sandwich places. A couple of them were the cafes, and then a couple of them were in food courts in shopping malls, and they were called Rolls Choice. And then at one stage, she also had a... it's great.
Great name.
They're still good rolls. I still remember the menu. I still remember what is on every single roll on the menu. And she also had a cafe and a bar, a restaurant and a bar, and yeah, just very much involved in the hospitality world in Canberra. And I was kind of one of those kids that you see fanging around the kitchens of different restaurants and cafes that you go to. And hospo owners out there who are parents know exactly what I'm talking about, just like having their kids just, you know, sit on the bonkets or sleep on the bonkets while they're prepping or whatever it might be.
So did she have history in publishing or writing or journalism, or just decided to do a local cookbook?
No. So, yeah. So, like, after mum sold her businesses, she sold her businesses in 2003, I think, 2003 or early 2004. And then, like, me and, like, anyone like you or I, it's like you kind of, if you sell a business, you're kind of onto the next project. Like, you just need something to do. And she had seen similar sort of regional publications before. There was one in particular in Byron Bay, and it kind of did a similar thing, sort of showcased the region, bit of photography, some recipes from local chefs and restaurants and stuff like that. But it's like 2004. I don't know. The food world was a bit different back then. Like, there wasn't such... I don't know. It doesn't seem like there was...
Yeah, the media wasn't probably the same.
Yeah.
I guess it was probably more based on professional chefs and the kind of the high end at that time. It was in the UK anyway.
Yeah.
Rather than those kind of local regional eateries.
Yeah, yeah. It was different. I guess this, like, the local food movement definitely wasn't as big. Mm. And so, inspired by that and not having another job, having just sold her businesses, she published the Capital Cookbook #1, and basically just sort of rang around her friends in the hospitality community in Canberra and said, hey, like, I want to do this, like, I want to publish a cool book and whatever. And she, like, you know, as you are, as like a, you know, a business owner and a entrepreneur of sorts, like, you just figure out how to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you wing it.
Yeah, like, you know, my dad, they weren't together at the time, they were divorced, but my dad had owned a camera shop for a long time, and that's kind of the photography side of me a little bit as well. But he, you know, employed a range of different photographers and stuff like that. So she found a dude, Jeremy Rosdars, shout out, who did the photography for that first book. And then another good friend who worked for her in one of the cafes, Todd Haywood, big shout out as well, because he was instrumental to helping me throughout, like, my figuring out of the process, was a graphic designer with experience in publishing. So he helped in that regard as well. And then they just kind of knuckled down and got to it and figured out how to, like, write recipes and, you know, enlisting services along the way to help out and getting this book together. And it was actually, that was my final year of school. So, like, my mum and Todd and Jeremy were, like, chained to the massive dining table we had in our house making this book while I was studying for my HSC, which was like, quite interesting and cool of a time figuring it all out from scratch.
It's a legit book. Like, it's a legit glossy, you know, coffee table book. Like, it kind of...
Well,
the way you made it sound was like, oh, I winged it, and there was, you know, someone found some paper and they'd a couple of paper clips on the side. Like, it's a very, you know, professional looking book for what was a little side hustle with when you haven't got much else to do.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, and I think that...
Who's in there?
From Canberra?
Of note. Anyone still open?
Yeah. Like, so Aubergine was in there. That was when Aubergine used to be owned by James Moussillon, who now owns Courgette in Canberra a couple of other restaurants. And I guess Ben Willis, who owns Aubergine now, is used to work for James. Courgette was in there. a place called Water's Edge, which is not there anymore. A place called Mezzalira, which is still there. That's owned by Pat Trimboli, who has Italian and sons down in Canberra down there now as well. Trying to think of who else was in there that's like still around. Sharif from the Ottoman in Canberra was in the first one. A couple of other things, but yeah, I don't know. It's a cool old sort of nostalgic look at it.
Mm.
So that was that was where it all started. That's how it started.
So that was the only one your mother did?
No. So then what happened was, Mum sold that book. That book sold 3,000 copies or something like that, I believe. Sold that book, and then she moved down to the South Coast. After that, we always had a house down the South Coast in Browley, and she moved down there. And then in 2008, she started publishing the South Coast Cookbook number one. And that was the one that she got me and my sister involved in. So I was...
Your apprenticeship.
My first apprenticeship. So I was there for basically all the photo shoots. We're going around all the restaurants taking photos. Shout out to all the businesses out there who remember that, 2008. That book sold really well. Like, obviously, you look back on previous publications and you're like, it wasn't amazing and stuff like that. But, you know, we kind of figured it out and we sold 5,000 copies of that book too. But, like, halfway through that process was when Mum got diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And basically, I don't know, she passed away, I reckon, like 9 months after that book was published. So we had... Me and my sister, who both worked on that book, we sort of like inherited the business in a sense. Like, we still had a massive storeroom full of books that we had to sell. Like, we had to continue the business. You know what I mean? Like, we had all these books that needed selling. So we sort of like continued the business from there. And
so that leads you on to the first book you did?
Yeah, so I think like we sold out of that book, and myself and my sister worked together to finish that book off and sell it out and stuff like that. And there was a period there where I spent a couple of years overseas and stuff. And then when I got back to Canberra, I got back from overseas in Canberra in 2013. I then decided I wanted to publish a book myself. And that's when I did the first book that I directed from scratch, which was the Capital Cookbook number 2. And that's when I was still living in Canberra. And so that's where I learned like what it really was to publish a book, because I was like 25 and no one knew me. They knew about the first Capital Cookbook, and I could kind of take it along to meetings and be like, this was the first one, get involved in the second one. Because like one of the hardest parts is getting people to get on board in these books.
Yeah, without those connections that your mum had originally.
Exactly. So like I kind of like bullshitted my way into pretending I knew what I was doing from the start, bringing that old book along, and they were like, yeah, I remember this book. Yeah, sure, we'll get involved in that one. But I guess like...
Well, at least they knew a template of what you were doing.
Yes, yeah. And I did I did sort of have relationships a little bit with some of the chefs. And I think, I guess what one of the important things is, and especially at the start, one of the most important things about these books is like, you need to get the credibility by enlisting like actually the best places.
You
know what I mean? Like, because if none of the top places are involved, it just doesn't have the credibility that you need, I believe, to be able to sell well. And so I was like shitting myself at the start as a 25-year-old, not knowing any of these chefs in Canberra. Like, you know, these guys have been in the game for a long time. Like guys like Josiah Lee, who has owned Chairman and Yip in Canberra for like, it's probably like 40 years old now. And like, you know, they're much more experienced business people than I am. Yeah. So like rocking up with a book that your mum published like 10 years ago and saying, hey, we're going to do another one. Like it was nerve wracking.
Yeah. I mean, we'll probably get onto what it's like dealing with chefs a bit later, but definitely I think you get a lot of like shit coming through your email address and through your door when you're in a restaurant, and there's like so many like made up awards, and like people like, I remember talking to like really early on, we had a call from like GQ magazine, and we were like, fuck, how did like GQ come? Oh my God. And they're like, oh, we'd love to have you in the magazine. We're like, sick. And then she's like, I'll just send some stuff through. And it was like paid advertisement. But the way they made it out was like, they found us specifically and they love what we did. And they were going to write this like little spread up of us. And it turned out it was like just $6,000 for a little tiny,
tiny
advertising
part.
So like, so this like stuff comes through, and then like random awards and things where like, you can like, one of the awards like had a price range of like, if you pay the top price, you got 6 trophies. And if you pay the low price, you only got 3 trophies.
That's ridiculous.
It's like, what the fuck? Like,
so the way that I did it for the first book as well, one of the little things that I used, which was important to me, but at the same time, I think it helped me in that, was that I connected that book to fundraising for ovarian cancer research.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I made it mandatory for every contributor to donate $300 to ovarian cancer research. I didn't take any money.
Mm.
And we gave $2 from each book sold to that as
yeah,
well.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that was good. Like, it generated a lot of money, but it was also like, they were like, especially the people that knew my mum, like they were pretty on board to like support
yeah,
it.
You know yeah, for
I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
So, but yeah, keep going. Like, obviously, yeah, you guys get a lot of shit through your door.
Yeah. So yeah. I think when someone comes to you, then you're always kind of a bit, I mean, R-ing, especially, yeah, like I said, you're 20, 25, your kind of first cookbook. It's a lot of like, and people also come to you with a lot of ideas, which
yeah.
you usually don't feel are going to come to fruition.
Well, it's funny because I know, like, and you can feel it from the first phone conversation or the first meeting, you can cut the air with a knife, because all people want to know is how much it's going to cost them.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
like all they care about to start with. Like, it doesn't matter what, they're not going to listen to you unless they know is this going to cost me money?
Yeah,
and if so, then maybe what is it and how much? Sometimes it's like, is this going to cost me money or not? Because if it is, I'm not interested no matter what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So just, you want to run through the books you've done since and possibly the years they were released.
So that was
some reference points.
2013 was the Capital Cookbook 2.
Mm-hmm.
20, and then, so I did that. That was kind of like a, essentially, I published that book because I got back from overseas and I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did that. And then when I finished like actually making the book and I was just selling it, I just had one book to sell. Like, it's not a full-time job just selling one book. So I went back into hospitality and did that for a couple of years while I was selling that book. But then I got sick of hospitality and I was like, all right, it's time to actually have a crack at this full-time. And so that was in 2015. So in 2015, I went back down the coast and started work on the South Coast Cookbook number 2.
Yeah.
So that was 2015. Then in 2016, that was when I was like, okay, Quicksand Publishing, Quicksand Books is going to be my full-time job for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. So 2016, I published the first was the Southern Highlands Cookbook. That was first. And then in the back end of 2016, I published the Capital Cookbook number 3. Then in 2017, I published the Illawarra Cookbook.
Yeah.
And in 2018, I published Farm to Flame, which was not a regional cookbook. It was about a place, I guess, but it was for Bistro Officina, the restaurant in Bowral that's now closed. And I haven't made any more books since then.
So you knocked out 4 off the bat, pretty sharpish.
Yeah.
And then didn't do any more.
Yeah.
What should we read into that?
So four between 15 and 18.
So do you have to set aside a year per book almost?
To make it?
Yeah.
You can do it in less.
Yeah.
It sort of depends on how many contributors there are.
Yeah.
Because it's like making these books is all a balancing act, right? Because like, number one, people don't want to pay to be in the book.
Yeah.
Right? But every contributor to a book costs me money.
Yeah.
So I need to, if I don't photograph it myself, I need to employ a photographer to do that photo shoot. Then I need to edit their recipes and do all the administration with just them to get me the recipes, because chasing recipes from a chef is one of the banes of my existence that I do not miss from publishing these cookbooks. I employ a copy editor who edits the recipes and gets them prepared for production. Then every page, so every recipe is 2 pages, and you can divide a book by the number of pages in it in terms of how much it costs.
Yeah.
So I can't just put an unlimited amount of contributors into a book. It needs to be balanced to a point where it's cost effective for me and whatever. And like, that can be mitigated by asking contributors to pay to be involved in it, or providing them incentives for them to contribute. So I've done things like that in the past, like provided incentives for them to contribute financially, like doing like full photo shoots for like a decent price and stuff like that. And that's something we can talk about later. Yeah. So hold on. Where what was the question?
What was the question? We don't think we were just talking generally there.
I was talking
about just how you did four books in a row of quite a short space of time. You did four books over three and a half years.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe we'll just go.
So it's all a balancing act.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically it's just all a balancing act, and the amount of time, that's what you were talking about, how long it takes. The amount of time is dependent on the number of contributors and how much content there is in a book, essentially. Yeah. But you can do it in start to finish, I reckon I could do one in 9 months, which includes 2 months turnaround of printing. So it takes a book a minimum of 2 months to be printed. So when you send it to the printers, from when it's delivered to your door in big pallets, that is a 2 month process.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So here we'll go back to when you decide. So for example, let's go for the Illawarra cookbook. When you decided to do a book in this area, what was your first steps from there?
I just started researching the best venues,
essentially.
So, first thing you look at is who's got hats, and that was you.
Yeah.
And then other places that I already knew about. So, I knew about Babyface. I knew about Rookie. I knew about Harbourfront.
Yeah.
I knew about Lagoon, which didn't make it in the book. I knew about a few other venues. And so, you sort of start... I start with making a list, essentially.
So contacting... Is your first spot?
Well, just making a list. So, before I start contacting, I make a list and I have it divided up into it's a spreadsheet. Like it turns out, it ends up being a huge spreadsheet, which is the sort of the Bible for the whole publication.
Yeah.
But I have definitely want in the book, restaurant section, potentially can go in the book.
Yeah.
Don't care if they are or they're not, but maybe
probables and possibles.
Probables and possibles and stuff like that. And so once I've sort of got that list together, then I really start. But what I figured out through the rest of them was talking to people like yourself, asking the chefs that have hats and the ones that are really well established and things like that, who should go in the book, is a really good way of making a list. And you really helped with that. And Timmy Day helped with that too.
Yeah,
Shout out to Timmy Day.
It was really interesting because I think, myself and Tim, maybe a couple of weeks before you contacted us, we were just having some drinks and talking about doing something similar, maybe not on quite a professional scale, but getting together a kind of guidebook, recipe book of local bars and restaurants. And we made a list of all the places we thought should be in. So when you contacted us, for one, it was oh, thank God, we haven't got to do it. Because it was something probably there was a drunken chat that might have gone somewhere else, which would have taken a lot of time. Also, we had a list ready to go. Just going to get handed over to you.
Yeah, exactly. That was perfect. And then I just kind of added a couple more bits and pieces. But it was perfect to have you guys there because I was also oh, what do you think of this place? And stuff. And I don't know. That's something we can talk about in a sec, but choosing places is fucking hard.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be the makeup of the book, of where you can get and who you choose and who's actually in it, I guess. So from once you've got some interest... and you might have locked some people in. Is it, I imagine it's a bit of a jump then to actually go, okay, let's start doing this.
Yeah, so once you make that first phone call to a place saying, hey, I'm making a book, then you're locked in and you're making the book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not really any pulling out from then.
Yeah.
Generally, when I have my list organized, I also then have in mind when a schedule of photography would happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next step from there is scheduling photo shoots.
Yeah.
So say there's 40 contributors in the Illawarra cookbook, I had to schedule 40 photo shoots. And I try to actually schedule this. What I figured out the most efficient way to do it, because chefs are so hard to talk to and to organize things with, is I try to do it in that first conversation. And it's generally not a first conversation. It's usually a first meeting.
Yeah.
So the call... And then I'm like, can I just I literally refined after all the experience of publishing the other books, I refined my pitch to this is what my pitch was. It was, I'm making a hardcover regional publication. Paying to be involved, the first most important thing, paying to be involved is optional.
Yeah.
And all I need is to come in and spend 5 minutes with you to show you the books that I've done in the past.
Yeah.
And we can go from there. Mm. And usually people would give you the 5 minutes and just say, just come in, I'm here now, just come in. And then I come in with the books and just say, this is what I'm doing, and then go from there. Yeah. And then it's at that time that I try to schedule a photo shoot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think when you contacted us, for one, I think you contacted us at a really good time because we had just taken over Kavo. We're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and up for everything. We're like, oh, book, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
We'll help. Yay. So we were pretty green. I think we're still pretty, generally pretty excited about people doing excited things, but probably a little bit more jaded since then.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you just get such a diversity of responses from different chefs. Like, I've had in the past everything from like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We'll definitely get involved. Like, to... Like, who are you kidding yourself, mate? Like, fuck off. Like, to, like, I remember one guy told me that, like, this was like, I've tried many a business model in the past. Mm. So basically one time, I think it was for the South Coast book, I tried to charge contributors. It was $300. Mm. And it's not because I'm greedy and it's not because whatever. It's like the only way for these businesses to be a successful business model is to have some form of second income stream other than just selling cookbooks.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it does not work. Mm. And so I was trying to charge $300, and what we'd do is we'd do a full photo shoot and give them all the photos. And it's it costs you way more to take those photos anyway. It's $300 is the cheapest photo shoot you'll ever get. Mm. And one guy was like, "Nah, mate, like that's like my suppliers coming to me and giving me their stuff and me saying I'm going to charge you for me to use your produce." And I'm like, no, it's not quite like that, actually.
Yeah, especially if you give them something that's tangible value, like the photos. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's worth the money anyway.
Yeah, like, it's funny. Like, I don't know. Advertising's a funny thing. Like, I don't work in the advertising world, but I've done a bit of the marketing world and stuff like that. And I can guarantee you that, like, being featured in a cookbook that's a hardcover publication that sits on people's shelves for a decade will provide you a lot better advertising than like a ad in a paper that gets thrown away or a click online.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like, I mean, I don't even try to market advertising to people really.
Yeah.
I just try to sell them photos.
It's just something of marketing and advertising. It's not very tangible. It's not in your hand.
It's not at all.
And it's very hard to link, extra income from something like that. But I mean, the fact that like, all the top companies and business in the world spend a lot of money on advertising.
I know.
Kind of shows that it's like, exactly. Might be something to this.
Yeah, there might be something in it. Yeah.
Yes. So I guess we'll move into, let's talk about how many hours you actually would put into a book.
Oh, shit.
And you might not want to know this.
No, I don't.
And then there's an estimate.
Oh, hours in total or hours every week or whatever?
I'm trying to work out if you're getting paid the award or not.
I definitely haven't been paid the award for a lot of the books that I've...
Yeah.
I definitely haven't been.
So,
there's been periods. I reckon in 2016... So, 2016 was the hardest I worked on Quicksand Publishing because I was determined to complete two books in a year.
Yeah.
So, like, we can talk about... Should we talk about the finances?
That's what I was going to move into. Obviously, working out how much of a labor of love is this... compared to actual financial gain.
Okay, so like a good start point, and like the way that I figure out what I do is that I figure out how much I sell a book for, and then how much money I can make.
Yeah,
like so, let's call it, and it's close enough. The wholesale price for a book is $25.
Yeah,
so a book retail price is $40, like most of mine are $40, and the wholesale price is a 40% discount. That's standard in publishing. So more or less it's $25. Most of the books that I print 4,000 copies, approximately, like more or less.
Yeah.
So $25 times 4,000 is $100,000 turnover.
Yeah.
Right? So I can do $100,000 turnover, and then I need to figure out, okay, well, how much is this book going to cost me to make?
Yeah.
And how much do I want to make out of it for my time?
Yeah.
And that's how I kind of, that's the very, very basic starting point of how the business model works.
Yeah, for sure.
So printing usually costs around somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000.
Right.
And then the rest of my resources, is, you know, photography, graphic design, copy editing, distribution, like advertising, like all that stuff comes into the budget. But I sort of like figured to myself at the start, I was like, all right, if I'm going to make $100,000 turnover with this book, then I'm going to try to spend 50 and make 50 and work for approximately a year.
You know
what I mean? Like make 50 grand that year. But like, let's, you know, be real. I was definitely working more than
30 hours a week.
Yeah, exactly.
With a lunch break.
Yeah, exactly. And then, so then like, you know, my stupid mind of 2016 was like, well, if I can make two books this year, then instead of making 50 grand this year, I could make 100 grand this year. But that almost like fucking broke me because I...
Did you just do them back to back or on, like on top of each other? Were you trying to do it at the same time?
Yeah, so no. So what happened was I started the Southern Highlands cookbook at the very beginning of the year.
Mm.
Completion date was July. Sent to print in July, 2 month turnaround for printing.
Yeah.
As soon as I sent that book to print, I started photo shoots for the Capital Cookbook.
Yeah, well.
And then completed those photo shoots for the Capital Cookbook. That book came back in August, September or something like that. This is approximate. Like, and then I'd finished, by that time I'd finished the photo shoots for the Capital Cookbook, launched the Southern Highlands Cookbook, finished making the Capital Cookbook, printed that, launched that before Christmas. So that was, I think in 2016, I probably had 10 weekends when I wasn't working.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like I was working 7 days a week for the majority of the year.
Yeah. I know what it feels like.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's pretty intense. I mean, and to make like what would be considered a good wage, you'd have to do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did that not dawn on you during that year?
That was like... I don't know. I guess I was like prepared for that at the start in order to start my business.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think you have to.
It's a learning experience.
Yeah.
So like if I was to start again, like if I was to do another book now, I think that I've had enough experience to figure out how to make it so I could balance my time with my value, like and how much money that I make.
Yeah.
And a part of that is based on how many books sell, many books like actually sell and how you actually make money. Because 4,000 is a bit of a number just sort of like plucked out of thin air. It seems to be approximately accurate.
What you can sell, yeah.
Yeah. But like, for example, I printed 4,000 of the Capital Cookbook number 3 and then recently printed another 2,000.
Yeah, okay.
And so it's that extra 2,000 is when I can actually make some money.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's your profit.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's the same as the South Coast Cookbook 2, the first one I did in 2015. I printed 3,800 of those and then subsequently printed another 2,000.
Yeah.
So like they're also, so, but like when it comes to printing, I could print more than, I could print, like if I printed 6,000, it's much cheaper for me to print those than it is for me to print 4,000 than 2,000.
But if it's going to take you 3 years to sell the last couple of thousand.
Yeah, but then also like with that extra, then I can use that for advertising.
Mm.
So it all sort of is like balancing and trying to figure out how many you can sell. But it's like, you know, if I say my turnover for 6,000 books is X amount, like it's $125,000 or something like that, then I can use 10,000 of that for advertising, which will hopefully sell those books a year faster than if I didn't have that advertising money and stuff. So
what things, little bits have you kind of learned over the years that you would put into place in your next book?
I think if I was to make another book, are we talking to make money or to make a better book?
Yeah, whatever. Or even just some more general things you've learned in business, in selling, in you know, even just photography or dealing with people.
I think that to make money, I'd probably be a little bit more, I'd probably want people to contribute more money. Because it's just not a viable business model otherwise. And I think that like now I've got a big enough portfolio and a successful enough portfolio to warrant like asking a bit more from contributors.
Mm-hmm.
Because fucking, I haven't asked for much in the past.
Yeah.
If anything.
Yeah, it was
like, and
was it $300 for the Illawarra one?
Well, yeah, and like we did all the photos and things like that. Yeah. Like what we did back then was like, it was like you could do like a medium sized photo shoot. We did three different packages. Yeah, like you do like, depending on the photo shoot, like we could do like a full thing where we photograph your venue and your menu and all that sort of stuff, and that was a bit more.
Yeah.
So maybe asking a little bit more from contributors and maybe being like, maybe asking more contributors to be involved and not necessarily caring too much if certain people said no because they didn't want to contribute the money. Like just actually having that in my head where it's like, I actually need this money in order to make this business work. And if it means losing X cafe or restaurant from the publication, I'm happy to do that because this business isn't going to work otherwise and I need to sort of prioritize myself a little bit. So that's one thing. The second thing that I've looked into in the past but I haven't been successful in doing is getting government funding and I'd like to look into that further because, like, for example, my cookbooks are sold at every tourist centre in all these regions.
Yeah.
I have a relationship with the managers of these tourist centres and the people that actually like are on the front lines of marketing the region.
Yeah.
And they choose my books independently. Like I get requests from tourist centers independently who people have just seen my books and go like, we want to sell them.
Yeah.
And it does promote the region.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? And there's a lot of funding put into things that promote the region that could be the smallest little thing. Like there are cultural grants out there. There are tourism grants out there and things like that. And to be able to collaborate with a council or a number of councils or, you know, state government or whatever it is to be able to secure funding to actually like give these publications what they need to be fucking awesome and be really, really like just distributed vastly like through the regions.
Yeah.
That would be something that could be really beneficial that I need to look into more.
Regional areas we're just generally pretty bereft of any kind of good more organic marketing like that. It's always like little tourism plans or
that's it.
It's like a guidebook and like we're always in the like Wollongong guidebook. Well, I don't ever really see it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like,
well, there's other places that have done it. Like, there's councils that sort of take the initiative themselves and they're like, okay, we're going to do this project. And like, the amount of resources they must spend on doing it, but they don't do it right because it's just too hard for a council to do. And they're not like, councils aren't book publishers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they're just getting people that work there to try to do it.
Yeah.
So like they spend money on that, but I don't know. Like,
but I mean like the Wollongong Visitors Guide like has some, it's actually got probably quite a lot of your photos in it anyway because everyone provides the photos you did for it.
They're getting recycled throughout.
Because I know the photos we've given them would have been ones you've taken. But like you're not going to, for one, you wouldn't give that as a gift to someone. You'll be like,
exactly.
I've got you the Wollongong Visitor Centre guide. You're welcome. Yeah. But like a cookbook, you can give it as a gift. You give it to people. It can just be shown somewhere. It can be sold. It has kind of so many avenues.
It's like I can like, if I was to approach a council about doing it, I could actually be like, here is a model for how much money, like if you invest this amount of money in this publication, this is how much money your council stands to make from the publication. Not talking about like intangible tourist assets. I'm talking about like if your council logo was on this book and like you were, you know, invested in this publication, this is how many books that I've sold through tourist centres in your council far, and this is how much money you've made.
Yeah.
And then think about the council, the gifts that you give as an organization to people. If you had these books that you're invested in as your gift at a wholesale price or at even more than a discounted wholesale price, that's the cost of them. Compare that to what you're currently paying for gifts. This is like, these are the other, you know, avenues under which you'll literally be just, this is just money. This is just numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like if you invest 10 grand in me here, I'll show you on paper where you'll make that 10 grand back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like there's definitely opportunity.
Yeah, there. I know when we go up to do podcasts with people in Sydney, sometimes you'll take a little book along and give it to them
as a gift.
As a little gift. But I guess it's always a good way because they're not going to, I mean, maybe some of them throw it out.
Well, they're not going to throw it out.
Well, exactly.
Throw it out.
They might do it through real assholes, but we haven't really interviewed any assholes.
Depends how much they like us after the podcast.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, that's probably going to sit on a shelf somewhere, you know, where someone will see it. And like for Wollongong especially, it's always just a struggle to get people to think of Wollongong as somewhere to go. You know, it's pretty different to Sydney. It's a different vibe. Like, it's worth coming from Sydney down to Wollongong for a weekend because it'll be a laugh and it's something different to do.
Mm.
But it's really hard to get people to think about that. They'll go to the Southern Highlands, they'll go further down, or they'll go to Canberra, or, you know, Hunter Valley, all these other places, when Wollongong's kind of on the doorstep. So anything that just kind of jogs people's memory, or they can look through and be like, oh, fuck, Wollongong's got a cool little vibe going on. Like, look at that place. That's sick.
Yeah.
Like, any little jog of a memory for someone maybe to come down and come hang out and party with us. I think it's always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of the things I really liked that you did with the Illawarra cookbook is you kind of used sort of four different tones to the photography and the layout to kind of represent the region. What kind of things do you take into consideration? How do you like translate what a region is into, you know, into a publication like that?
Yeah, so like the design, the graphic design is like one of the most important things to the book. Like I think the reason that the books are successful, and I think it's worth mentioning that, like, the books actually are successful. Yeah, like, I kind of maybe seem to be talking about them as if, like, it's all a pain in the ass and it's all too hard and it's not worth it and I don't make any money. Like, I mean, the reality is that despite maybe not fucking being rich, like, I've supported myself and built a business, like, that's lasted for 5 years purely based on these cookbooks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I haven't done anything else. Mm. So that's success.
What about all the podcast money we're making?
Yeah. We made $100 once. But yeah, so like it is successful.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? And there's a lot that goes into that. But I think that like one of the first things that I try to do is you just have to make stuff quality. Mm. Like you just have to like and especially when you're selling a cookbook, it's like if it's going to be in dimmicks, and so my books are in dimmicks, like in every region that I've covered, and they're in dimmicks on George Street in Sydney, next to all the best cookbooks in the fucking
20
world.
20 different Ottolenghi cookbooks.
Exactly, Ottolenghi ones and Jamie Oliver ones and whatever. And it's like, if you're going to do something that's subpar, that doesn't stand up quality-wise, it's not going to sell. And you need to
people
invest.
People aren't going to stock, a place like that's not going to stock it, because it's going to they'll take one look at it and go,
that's exactly right. These people look at books all day and they decide whether or not they want to buy them.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. Like it needs to be quality. If you're going to take if you take shortcuts in quality, like it's just not going to work. And so the major things, like the three components to producing quality, is good photography, good graphic design, and quality materials. So hardcover, like embellishments, quality paper. Those are the things that make a quality cookbook. But like the quality of graphic design, like photography and graphic design, I'd put in the same boat. But like the quality of graphic design, and before I do anything, let's shout out to Tess Godkin, who's been like the best photographer that I've ever worked with. I mean, one of the only ones. But like she shot the South Coast, she shot the Capital Cookbook too. She shot the South Coast Cookbook. Well, half of it. I did half of it. She shot most of the Illawarra Cookbook. And she's just fantastic, and she taught me so much. Like, I literally would not be a photographer now if it wasn't for Tess.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, the reason I can take food photos now is because of Tess and doing hundreds of photo shoots together, which is awesome. But then, then graphic design comes into it. So Linnea Hedeborg, shout out to Linnea, who I first engaged for the Southern Highlands cookbook, and then we did the Capital cookbook together, then we did the Illawarra cookbook together, then we did Farm to Flame together. Mm. She really took the graphic design to the next level and educated me on how important it is and how you can go about creating something that works really well when you dig into the core of what a place is and try to find ways of representing that. So and her creativity and her ability to design things and use space and you know, use interesting little historical artifacts from regions in books that you wouldn't even notice, but when it comes together, it's seamless and it looks really cool.
It makes it more than just a recipe pamphlet.
Exactly.
You know, I guess that's kind of what makes it a book.
Yeah.
Rather than just a list.
Yeah, well, that's it. And like most of these things, so like we'll talk about the Illawarra cookbook, but most of these things were like Linear's ideas. So when you look at the cover, the typography of the Illawarra cookbooks, this font called Railroad Gothic, which was like this bold font that was used to stamp into railway sleepers from an old steel mill. And we're a steel city. And that's where she decided to sort of use that.
Yeah.
And even though it looks like that decision wasn't made, those are the small sort of things that really bring something to a publication. And then the second thing was the chapter layout. So in the Illawarra, we have like three obvious environments. We have the mountains, we have the land, and we have the sea.
Yeah.
Like it can't be any more simple than that, like for where we live. And so she divided the book into chapters, and it wasn't expressed in explicit terms. It wasn't expressed in like, this is the chapter about the mountains. Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was just expressed in color palette and photography and stuff like that. So if you look in the Illawarra cookbook, the colors are different between each chapters. And it's green for the mountains and sort of like red and orange for the land and blue and stuff for the sea. Mm. And it like we don't even explicitly say that that's what this is. Yeah. It just comes out in the book. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure like you told me and I was like,
yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what sort of makes it work. And that's how you go about sort of like representing a region. Like, and that's what Linear did for me for all of these publications. Like for the Southern Highlands book, she like looks into the history of the Southern Highlands and thinks about fonts that marry with, you know, the different estates. Like she might have found a font that just fits in perfectly and the aesthetic and the illustrations that are in the book and things like that. So that's a part of it. And then also, I guess, that's where sort of photography comes in as well, which is the really explicit sort of representation of what that region looks like. But I guess with photography as well, it's like you need to like, I mean, for every photo that's in a book, there's 10 photos that aren't used.
Yeah.
There's so many photos that we've got. And it's a part of it, the art is selecting those photos to sort of convey that visual message and get that visual consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things with design. People wouldn't explicitly have that knowledge of what makes a good cookbook. So it is kind of it's something you notice when it's good versus bad, but you don't notice all those little small things that go into making it good.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a hard thing where, again, it's kind of like providing value to people. People go, oh, it's a cookbook. It's a photo. It's a recipe. Like, and they're seeing like, why have I got to pay $300 for it? But there's these little things, these decisions that go into something that's making something quality. Like you know, said, like having good quality paper.
Yes.
Like it's not something most people would think about, but makes a massive difference when you pick up a book.
Well, like,
you can feel it straight away.
The difference between good quality and bad quality paper, like good quality and average quality paper, and like it can almost sometimes be something that you wouldn't notice, but I would if you immediately looked at it. But that can be like multiple $1,000 decision.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can notice it, but you might not be able to, but you pay the extra.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like there's it gets down to like pretty nitty gritty when it comes to that sort of decision making.
Yeah, when as soon as something's multiplied by 4,000.
Exactly.
It's yeah. I was thinking about like when Tom and I replaced the cutlery at Caveau. And yeah. I'd be like, how much a fork cost? I'm like, I don't really know. How much does a fork cost? But when you've got to buy enough for a 50-seater restaurant to do a 10-course menu, it's like thousands and thousands of dollars on a shit ton of fucking knives and forks. And it's one of the things that I suppose one of the earliest awakenings of like scaling, like scale of things. Like a fork's $4. We've need 1,000 of them.
It's funny, I always think to like the classic example is, have you ever picked up like an old Coke can and it's really heavy?
Yeah.
It's like really heavy aluminium.
Yeah.
So like the raw material, like so a Coke can used to weigh double what it does now.
Yeah.
And just the cost of the raw materials of the aluminium. So like now Coke cans are like
the thinnest
aluminium. Like
you can tear them like paper.
But if they could put one less gram or one less half a gram of aluminium into the can, it would translate into millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Like
yeah. So even like things on that scale, it's even like the weight of freighting it.
Yeah.
Is like if you take a gram away from everything, they're going to save this much on fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's tiny little yeah. points of percentage
yeah.
that make a big difference. And I mean, I think like obviously that's a kind of monetary example, but that makes a difference in quality.
Yeah.
Like across the board, across all businesses, all industries, little 1% and they add up to make that, you know, that 5%
yeah.
that makes you better than
and
someone
it's
else.
Full, like that's what it's full of them. Like that's what these publications are full of. It's like these little decisions that are like, all right, it's going to cost me money, but I have to do it because it's going to be a better publication for it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So when you have finished your 9 months of work, and the book is finally printed and in your hand, what is that? What's that feeling like? Is it relief or is it kind of
it's strangely anticlimactic, eh?
Yeah, right.
So like so what they do is so the bulk shipment, so when you get your 4,000 books, it's like it comes on pallets via sea freight. Yeah. But they ship you advance copies via airmail.
Okay.
So you get like you get a couple of copies like a month before the rest are due, and like that's the moment of like opening it up and like looking at the book and stuff like that. In my experience, and it sucks, but one of the first things that happens is you notice a mistake. It's so fucked up, but like there are mistakes in all my books. Shout out if you fucking have seen one, because there's plenty of them. But like I dare say that there's mistakes in every book.
Well, yeah, and yeah. Is it all books or just you?
I think it's all books, eh? Like there are definite mistakes in all books.
I mean,
you think about it. Like you think about an index.
Yeah, yeah.
For every item, every food item that is in an index, you have to get the correct page number. Like, there definitely can be mistakes.
Yeah,
and I've made
yeah.
some fucking whopping mistakes in my time that are much more than just an index
mistake. Like an index mistake, I don't think.
But yeah, like, there are mistakes in books. Like, for example, there are mistakes in recipes. So there was a mistake in a recipe where I'm not even going to tell you. Should I tell you which book it is?
I think you told me before this one.
There was a mistake in a recipe that was a cookie. Yeah, you can look it up in which book it is, but it's a recipe for cookies, and for some reason, I don't know how we fucking lost it, but the flour in the recipe just got removed and there's no flour in the recipe in the book, so the recipe's fucked.
Yeah.
You can't make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be one of the harder things to get right is the recipes, because someone else is providing them. And even just looking through them just to spell check.
Yeah.
You're obviously not going to miss something that maybe should have been there if the person who's written it has missed it.
Let's get onto that in a second. But like you were asking about what the feeling is like when you get it and whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, so you do notice mistakes, but I guess like hopefully, like one of the first things, you're looking at colors. Colors is really important. So you go through this like really big color proofing process to make sure that you get all the colors right in the book and stuff.
Right,
so like you want to make sure that you've got your colors right. Like there's color studios that do, and I've spent money on them before. Like I spent $3,000 or something like that on a color studio to ensure, like to liaise with the printer to ensure that my colors were spot on.
Yeah.
And it's an expensive investment, but that's another one of those 1%ers when it comes to quality. Like a lot of the time, like you can just go with what you've got, or you can use professional people who, like, literally they're a color studio and they talk to printers all day about how to get the colors right, and that's what they do.
So you're doing one last proof when you get that
when you get
that copy.
Well, you can't proof it. That's it. That's what you get.
Right,
there's no changes from there.
So you're just doing it for self-flagellation.
You just look
point.
At it. Yeah, you just look at it. Yeah, you're just looking at it. But like with the colors, like it's like It depends on what paper you use and what printers the printer uses.
Yeah, right.
And that's why you use a color studio.
Mm.
So like you're looking at colors, and then like the majority of my publications, I've been like, fuck yeah, sweet. Mm. It looks good. This is the book that I envisaged. It's awesome to have it in my hand. I think it'll sell and cool. Like, it's just annoying that those mistakes, like if you do notice a small mistake, it's like, shit. It sort of takes away from the experience.
Yeah, but, yeah. No, I'd hate that. That would kill it for me. That would be my whole year.
That's not all my books. Like most of my books are fine, actually.
Yeah,
there's only been a couple. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't noticed any in any of the books I looked at.
Most people don't notice them, but I do.
Yeah. Well, that's the worst thing.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's good. And then like during that time, you're kind of planning the launch and you're planning retailers, like, I guess the retailers are the whole other side of it as well. Mm. It's like, how the fuck I sell these things.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, you know, I now, luckily, especially in the regions that I, you know, work in, I'm lucky to have really good relationships with my retailers. And I think that's one of the benefits of being independent. It's like me, it's the guy, and they just call me and I'm like, hey, Mari, you want some more books? And they're like, yeah, take some more books.
Yeah, I guess already having that relationship, you can just be like, I've got another book. And they're, then they're going to stock it.
Yep. And like, and now I'm at the point where like people are like constantly asking if they're gonna, if like, when's the next one coming out? When's the next one coming? For all my books, people are like, when's the next one coming out? When's the next one coming out? And stuff. So there's demand, which is kind of cool. And like, like, it's taken me this long, but luckily I'm at a point now where I'm like, I can be confident in talking to chefs about a publication and getting them involved, and I can be confident going to retailers and getting them on board. Mm. But like, when I was doing my first books and trying to sell them, I was literally just walking into shops with a book in, under my arm and saying, hey, do you want to sell this book?
Yeah.
And it's hard. That's like when you're 25.
And it's pretty weird just to be rock up with like your product.
Like, yeah, like
under
kind
your,
of
under your arm and be like,
and like, you got to figure out how it works. Like, I know now how book retail works, but like, you have to figure it out. And like, I didn't even know what that there was such a role as a book buyer.
Yeah.
Previously, like, I mean, it sounds normal when you say the word book buyer, but that's the person you're looking for. You're looking for who the buyer is.
Exactly.
They're the person that makes the decisions.
Everyone has different systems of how they buy and how they bring things in. Yeah. Like, whether it's centralized or if it's, you know, per store, or like what they do. So yeah, we're working out those ins and outs.
Mm.
Is something, especially if you haven't got someone teaching as you were, if you're just winging it, it can be like a little bit embarrassing when you're trying to go in somewhere and you know what you want to do. It's like, all I want to do is have you buy this book, but I don't know the words to say and the order to say them and who to say them to to make that
That's
happen.
Exactly right.
So can we just make this easier?
Well, I didn't even know what the discount's supposed to be.
Yeah,
like
at
the start, I'm like, how the fuck, like, what's the wholesale price? Like, and you know, that sort of thing. Mm. There's all sorts of things. There's like firm sale, there's consignment, and there's cash, what's the other one? Sale or return. Like, there's different like terms.
Yeah.
Like, and things like that, like, that you don't know unless you talk to people.
I mean, similar when I first, you know, took over Cravo and had to do a wine list and buy wine and price wine and cost wine. And I'd never done before. I knew about wine, but I didn't know those ins and outs. So it's basically learning on the fly and learning what these, like, you know, LUC stood for, and like how how to communicate with people in the industry so you don't sound like a fucking noob.
Mm.
And that's all. You're just like, I just want to sound like a noob and I want you to buy the book.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, I just want to get some wine and put it on the list. After that's fine. But
The beauty of it though, like, and what the cool thing has been is that if people don't know what you do, then they might be skeptical to start with. Mm. But the undeniable thing is that the books sell.
Yeah.
So like, in these regions, because of the fact that they're unique to all the bookshops that are here, like, there's not that many local publications that are made by a local organization that are about the local area. If they are, they might be books like photographic journals in a sense of like, here's photos of Kayama or whatever it might be. But there's nothing like the South Coast Cookbook.
Yeah.
So you might be like, and they tick a lot of boxes when it comes to people buying them. Like, it can be like, you don't have to be into food to buy it for someone as a gift.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's a representation of the area.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And so they do sell really well. Like, I've got retailers that sell more of my book than they do of most of their other cookbooks.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So like, in, when I launched the Southern Highlands Cookbook, Mari from the bookshop in Bowral, like one of the big bookshops on Bong Bong Street, the main street of Bowral, she put my book in the window and they sold like hundreds and hundreds of copies of that book, like, before Christmas.
Yeah.
And killed it. And then it's like, well, now I've got a good relationship with Mari and she knows what I do. And
give me a reference.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That Christmas run up.
Yeah. So that's the funny thing. Because they, like, I mean, I've never really had, like, because most of the time, like, if I'm finding it hard to get a retailer on board, I will say to them, you can just give them back. Like, we can do sale or return terms where if you're not selling them, you can give back what you've got left and I'll refund you for the books that you give me back.
Yeah, okay. So they'll still pay up front, but there's an option to...
Yes. And, I mean, I reckon it's happened once that I've been given back books.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
In all of my
publishing. At least you have the confidence to be able to do that.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's a really kind of no loss situation for the bookshop then.
Yeah, well, exactly. Mm. Yeah, and that's like, I guess that is the one benefit when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Yeah. So we might move on to your, what's the most recent book you published?
Yeah.
The Bistroff Sheena book. So a bit of a departure from your previous books. This was about a restaurant rather than a region.
Yeah.
Do you want to just go over how that came about and some of the differences?
Yeah, so... Yeah, this one's a funny story, I guess. Like, we're going to be honest on this podcast. We promised each other that we'd be honest on this podcast, so let's talk about it. I don't know, like, I won't say everything, but I'll say most stuff. But, like, so the original publication, so the book's called Farm to Flame, and it's still available. Get yourself a copy, because I've got lots of them, and I want to sell them.
It's still a good book.
And it's still a good book. Like, it's still a fucking cool book. It's actually the best cookbook I've made.
Yeah.
In terms of, like... aesthetics and like how it looks as a cookbook, yeah. I think it's the best book that I've made.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was for the restaurant Bistro Officina up in Bowral. If you haven't heard of it, yeah, like a friend Nico opened that business with his wife Alex, and they ran it at the Berida Hotel for a few years. They won a hat in their first year, and yeah, I met Nico through the Southern Highlands Cookbook. And then he kind of like, I've had a lot of people throughout my book publishing career indicate to me that they want to make cookbooks.
I think like it's a little bit of a chef dream.
Yeah.
For most chefs, they'd love to have a book.
Yes.
I think most obviously wait for the opportunity to present itself to them. I think Nico obviously went and wanted to do it quite specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so I guess like... And, like, at the end of the day, this is all a learning experience. And I mean, I regret some of it, but I don't regret any of it in a way as well. But it was like, so originally he indicated to me that he wanted to do a cookbook.
Mm.
And I was averse to the idea of risking my money to put into this book to make it happen. And what I've done in the past, what I can do for restaurants is like, if you're willing to put about this amount of money into a book, and this amount of work into a book, this is how many books you can sell, and you can either profit from it or you can break even.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's just a really valuable marketing tool for your restaurant, right? And I still think that it would have been a profitable book if that had been the case. So originally we planned on doing it, and he was going to contract me to make this book for him, and they were going to fund it. And they were going to fund it. We started work on the publication, and a part of it was because I was absolutely fucking stupid in getting my contracts organized and things like that. And like, where I should have done things on a legal and contractual basis, I did things on a trust basis. But we started work on the book and things like that. And then it got to a point where he wasn't able to pay for the rest of the publication. And that was because... he had an unexpected child and had to sell his house and like moved into a new place or something like that, and they couldn't pay for the rest of the publication. You know, I don't know what happens with the finances of the business and things like that.
Yeah.
And I was at a point where I'd already invested a lot of time into that publication, like heaps of time into that publication and my own resources and money and things like that. And I sort of thought... this is going to be like, I'm already in the process of making a really cool book here.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be so sad for me to pull out and just not make this book anymore and just sort of cut my losses and leave it right here. Like, Nico still wants to make the book. Like, let's do it. And so I was like, fuck it, I'll pay for the printing. So I paid for the rest of the publication, and we made the book, and I was like, I'm just like, I now own the publication and we're going to try to make some money. Like, I'm going to try to make some money, and like, I still think that it would have made money, but at the end of the day, like, Nico closed his business like a few months after that book was released, unfortunately. There's probably no point in going into the details of why why the business actually closed.
Yeah,
but that was the reality.
Yeah, and then it's obviously just poor timing for yourself. And yeah, I guess it's the fact that you don't particularly do these books just for money.
Yeah.
You enjoy doing them and you're on a project. And, you know, his food was great and, like, all the photography is beautiful. And then, you know, the book turned out amazing. So the kind of the temptation to just be like, oh, well, I've started it now, so let's crack on and do it.
Yeah. Like, I kind of wasn't thinking at the time, like, well, what happens if the business closes?
Yeah.
I'm like, what will happen? Like, I was thinking of the positive side. And I still think that if the business was still open now, it'll be a profitable book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We already had lined up. So, like, before the business closed, we already had Nico lined up to do events with. He was going to do an aperitivo at the Dolphin.
Mm.
He was going to do an event with Guy Grossi at the Melbourne Food Festival.
Yeah, yeah.
He was going to do numerous events all around Australia where he'd promote himself, his business, and the book.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, you just continue that sort of trajectory. And it was about sort of like the marketing campaign, the marketing strategy was about marketing him as a chef and marketing the book alongside that and sort of like letting the book ride the coattails of the success of that business. But as things go in hospitality, that doesn't always work out. And the business closed, so now I've got like a couple of thousand copies of Farm to Flame in storage in Montague Street, North Wollongong. And if you want to buy one, if you go onto quicksandfood.com and you go into the store, you can buy any book and then you get Farm to Flame half price.
I mean, there's some really doable recipes in there.
It's fucking, it's a sick book, like, man. Like, it's actually a really cool book. It looks really cool and it's got really cool recipes.
Yeah. I mean, where the original books would be a bit of a mix of some things that are doable at home and then some, you know, more technical things.
Mm. Well, that was what was awesome about creating Farm to Flame is because it was about one place.
Mm.
And we shot recipes in a few different locations because some were shot on the farm and some were shot in the restaurant. Yeah. But being able to curate the aesthetics of a book from scratch, from the ground up, rather than like being sort of beholden to the dishes, like the way that the dishes are presented from like 40 different chefs and trying to tie that all together.
Mm.
Like being able to curate that from the ground up, like, is huge when it comes to being able to like auteur a visual thing, like a visual representation of a place in a venue.
Would you, if someone else approached you, from a restaurant, from a chef, to do another book, what would you consider it?
Peter Gilmore, if you would like to do another book.
The Key Cookbook part two.
Yeah, second Key Cookbook. Then I'm, like Renee, if you want to come talk to me, Massimo, like if you want to have a chat, then maybe I'll make a book for you or one something like that. So yeah, definitely.
Not my favorite Italian chef, by the way.
I definitely consider it. Yeah, look, maybe, who knows? There's different ways to do it, you know? Like, there's not... I probably wouldn't necessarily take all the risk again.
Yeah.
I didn't intend to take all the risk from the start of that publication, but I probably wouldn't do it again. And I think that, like, to be honest, if there's people out there with big Instagram followings and stuff like that and big followings, I reckon I could make them money on a book, on an independently published cookbook. So, like,
I've got 1,600 followers now.
It's not enough, Simon.
Not enough?
It's not enough. Yeah, no, like, I don't know how much people make from cookbooks. I don't know how much money people make from cookbooks. But I think, like, I reckon that there are certain chefs out there that if they invested in me to make a cookbook for them, I would make them as much, if not more money, than they would going with a publisher if they did it independently and sold them all online.
What do you think the advantages are of going to an independent publisher rather than approaching a big scale company?
Number one, I think it's that you have, and there's probably people that work for big publishing houses here, like maybe listening, that are like, hey, he's full of shit. And I probably am. might not know what I'm talking about. But a huge one when it comes to having the rights to your own book is being able to sell books online at a retail price.
Mm.
So 40% is the wholesale discount. So the standard book I sell for 40% off. When I sell a book online that's $40, I make $40.
Yeah.
When I sell a book through a shop, it's $25. So if you own a restaurant and you publish your own cookbook, so if like Lennox Hastie already has a book that's, you know, wildly popular and he's probably made good money off Finding Fire. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah.
But he also has a big profile and a big following. And if Firedoor just had a bookshop online that had Finding Fire and they made every single dollar from that book, they would make more money in the online sales.
Yeah, you've got to sell X amount less.
Yes.
To make the same money.
But you'd still have to go. You'd still have to go and flog your book at other places and things like that and whatever. But like the business model is completely different when you own the rights to your own publication. And I think that like, I just think that like in the world of Instagram, especially like in the food world, like when you've got chefs out there that have hundreds of thousands of followers.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be much trouble for them to sell 4,000 copies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that, like if you sell 4,000 copies at $40 instead of $25, then you're doing all right compared to a business model where like, well, for me, it's wholesale, but I don't even know what publisher contracts look like.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
But that's like, I mean, 4,000 books is bugger all when it comes to a major publisher for a national publication. Like, in that sphere, we're talking like, into the 20, like 50, 100,000 copies, like sales figures. So, I mean, it's a completely different business model and I'm sort of speculating and stuff, but like I still reckon you could make money. It'd be worth your time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Shout out. If anyone wants to holler at me to strap the boots back on and make another independent cookbook.
I've still got it.
Well,
I've still got
it. Like, I mean, I can literally write a business plan for a book and say this is how much everything's going to cost and this is, and if you sell this quantity of books, this is how much money you're going to make.
Yeah. I guess it might probably one of the things that seems actually out of the realms of possibility to a lot of people of like, I'd like to do a book. I've got a bit of a following. But actually, until someone actually approached you and said, I think we can make some money, it's probably quite a hard jump to take to assume that yourself.
Mm. Well, it's like, I can't remember what they're called, but Louisa Brimble, a photographer, like a food photographer who's pretty prominent online, does a lot of photography for Australian organisations. And I can't remember, is it called Some Kind Press, I believe? Like, she's started an organisation and I can't speculate how the business model works, but it's where essentially businesses can go to her to get their book published.
Right, okay.
Essentially.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, what it looks like to me is that there's sort of like a template of what these books look like. It's like, not every single book is like completely individualized.
Yeah,
the photography and the recipes and those sorts of things are different.
I mean, that's...
I'm not sure though. I don't want to speak out of turn.
Yeah. Possibly when I asked the question, I was more thinking from my side that the control of the book and the input would be a selling point for like if it was...
Yeah, okay, right.
If it was me, I would want like a fair bit of control over the book with the way it looked, the layout and things like that. And obviously, you know, we're taking advice from people who know more.
Yeah.
But like something like that would be, I imagine, again, speculation. I don't know how big publishing companies work, but I imagine they'd be a lot more set in like, we need to do it like this, we need to do a book like this, this is what will sell, has to be, you know, this kind of vibe.
Mm. Yeah. I think it would be a selling point. It just, I guess it has a bit to do with your amount, like how much you can back yourself on developing a concept that you really want to get behind. Because, like, I mean, realistically, they're pretty fucking good at it as well.
Yeah.
Oh, like, when it comes to restaurant publications, like, if you look at a book like Igni or, you know, James Vile's book, Biota, from back in 2015 or whenever it was, or Finding Fire, or a lot of these sort of, like, Bray, like, restaurant publications, they're beautiful. They're fucking beautiful publications.
I find some of them, Igni, not so much. Igni was wildly original and was quite a fucking tale reading that book.
Mm.
You're like, bloody hell. But I find a lot of books have a similar, are a bit samey, where it's like, this is a story of a day in the restaurant and we start with this. And, you know, it's half fucking bullshit and it's fucking half made up. And I just find a lot of them are... do come across a bit samey. And whereas I think Igni was actually kind of attacked it from a slightly different way, which I respected. But I think like if I was going to do something when I get up to 40,000 followers, I would want to do something like original and you know, unique in its own way.
Yeah.
I think that would be the key one.
Who knows? I don't know. It's a hard one. Like when it comes to strapping the boots back on, I haven't made a book since 2018. I've been just freelancing since then. Like I've somehow managed to parlay Quicksand Food into I do copywriting, I do food photography, I do consulting. Like now apparently I do audio production and a bunch of different things. So I've managed to make a living off Quicksand Food.
How following with your public. Your current work situation, which everyone is quite confused about most of the time. So, what does Steph do? And I'm like, I don't know. Podcasts.
Yeah.
Qantas pay us once. Do you think the lot of skills you learn making these books have translated into being kind of the kind of broad worker you are now, where you do a bit of photography, some copy, some design, like all stuff you probably put into books, and now you're making a bit of cash?
Definitely.
Independently.
Yeah. 100%. Mm. Like most of this stuff, like as I said, like I wouldn't know how to take photos of food if it wasn't for Tess.
Mm.
So Tess showed me how to take...
Podcasting, for one.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. Podcasting started with the books as well.
Yeah.
But, Tess taught me how to take photos, and now I take, like, it's weird to say I'm available for commercial food photography, but I am. Like, I've done it for, you know, dozens of different venues.
Yeah, yeah.
The same when it comes to, like, copywriting and stuff. Like, if anyone wants to hire me as a recipe editor, like, I've edited hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of recipes, and I know how to do it. And
product development also?
Like, all sorts of different things.
Both available for that?
Yeah, like all sorts of different things. And yeah, most of it comes from that. But I guess, like, a part of it is, like, what comes out of it is learning to be self-motivated, learning how to be, like, entrepreneurial in a sense. Like, learning how to problem solve, and learning how to... Even if you don't know everything about a particular project, which is hard to find, like, you know, especially if it's something broad, learning how to do it and being able to understand things and take things forward.
Problem solving, I think, is something that, for one, I think hospitality teaches very well.
Yes, for sure.
From my point of view. And it's something that's just wildly useful in any industry, in any job you have. Be able to think rationally and logically and come to a solution. And imagine, on the course of 9 months of making a book, imagine there's lots of, like, little sticking points you get to where you have to, you know, fucking think on the fly and, you know, do something that's going to work.
Mm, totally. Like, I mean, if you were to list the amount, like, you know how people have, like, their duties on their resume? Like, I worked at the bank. My duties were cash deposits. Like, and, like, say food service and stuff like that. Like, if you were to list my duties for Quicksand Food, it is pages long. Like, I'm doing everything from taking photos to... recipe editing to organizing a social media strategy to organizing a marketing strategy to liaising with printers to, like, everything. So yes, in terms of, like, learning how to do shit, it's been a journey.
Liaising with chefs, which is one of the last things I think we'll move on to. Because I know that was one of the sort of first things we chatted about with you, and why you kind of came to us, myself and Tom, first at Kavo, to try and get us on board, to help get other people on board. And dealing with chefs is probably not the funnest thing to do, because we're all a bit overworked, lacking time, and are a bit standoffish when someone comes to you with an idea out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's good and it's hard. Like, it's both things.
Mm.
Probably the very, very hardest part of it is getting them to send me fucking recipes. It's like, we came to your restaurant and we photographed three dishes. Like, it says in the thing that you signed that you would supply us with these recipes within 2 weeks of us completing the photo shoot, and it's the last day and you haven't sent us anything. And, like, I've had everything from, like, chefs that have gone away and tested their recipes themselves, which I ask people to do, like, just give them a first test and make sure or whatever, and then we'll figure it out after that. To, like, and they write it all out absolutely perfectly, and then we just edit that, and that's great. Mm. To one chef, I won't say who it was, but one was like, "Mate, I'm not going to have the time to send you a recipe." Hit the record thing on your phone and I'll tell you how I made it. And so I recorded him telling me how he made it. And me going, like, "So how much flour was it?" Yeah. And he was like, "I don't know, 200 grams, like, or whatever." And then I have to, like, listen to that and then turn that into a recipe.
That might just be the easy way of doing it. Just wait there, just be like, just talk into this and say the recipe.
No, because, see, like, another fucking hard thing about it is that chefs always have such a big ego that they want to make the coolest fucking dish in the world.
Yeah.
Like, with a million components and stuff. And it's like, dude, it's a cookbook, right? It's not, like, a place for you to show how cool of a chef you are. Like, please do something that people can cook.
We completely ignored that.
No,
with Cavo.
100% you ignored that.
But also, I wasn't going to put anything that other people could cook in anyway.
Well, exactly. Like, I mean, it's a hard balancing act, but at the same time, it's like,
well, I don't know,
surely,
like,
you can find a middle ground.
I think I warned you when I, before I sent them, whether it was on time.
Yours
or not.
Were ridiculous.
Well, yeah, because I had like,
you had like 12 components to each of your dishes.
There was like 20 ingredients to the brine I used.
Yes.
So like, but like, yeah, I mean, that was the kind of food we did. It was like, it looked fairly simple on a plate.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, we figure out how to adapt it. Like, I mean, they're not going to make it look like, and that's the beauty of having a section that's like a chef's note.
Yeah,
you put a chef's note in there saying, like, Cavo uses a much more detailed recipe that involves like these components.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to make this from scratch, like, you can buy these components. Like, you can buy dehydrated raspberries. You can buy like this, that, and the other. And we're going to tell you to do the home version. But like, the photo is what you guys do because that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was actually one of the benefits of doing the Bistro of Achina book as well. It was actually all achievable and easy recipes.
Yeah, yeah.
Apart from a couple that had liquid nitrogen, but like other than that.
So when you read like Heston's Fat Duck cookbook,
yeah,
and it's like it's just like the first thing on the recipe sheet, you'd be like, right, can't do that.
Yeah, no.
Moving on.
Yeah, I've always used the example of, you know, Magnus Nielsen's book, the For Vegan book.
Take four peas. There was, serves four.
Yeah. In that Favikan book, one of the recipes is vinegar aged in a burnt out spruce tree. And it's like, and that's a recipe? It's like, you just got to get a burnt out spruce tree.
If spruce tree not available, use oak tree.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Out of control.
Yeah. Has there been, so see, one side was chefs just trying to throw everything and do the most complicated dishes. Is there any place you've been where chefs just put out something that was a bit shitty and you had to be like, maybe some micro herbs?
No,
everyone's been good.
No, like, simplicity is good. Simplicity is good. Like, and I mean, if they're a chef, usually they've got some sort of an idea about food and we can make it look good.
Yeah.
And then we can make it, like, I mean, yeah, there's some simple recipes in some of the books. Like, there's a recipe in one of the books for like salt and pepper flash fried school prawns with aioli.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's a good recipe. Mm. You know what I mean? It's good food.
Mm.
There's probably some in there here and there that you're like, not ideal, but we'll make it look as nice as possible. And then when we write the recipe, we'll make it sound as nice as possible. And it'll come together.
Mm.
You know, like, but yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, like styling and things like that. Sometimes the presentation's terrible.
Yeah.
Don't like things that come out on big white square plates and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then we're like, here, we've got a plate. Use that, like, and stuff. So food styling's another thing I've learned.
Yeah, big white square plates.
Yeah.
That was all the rage when I was in college.
Not good for photography.
No.
For sure.
Just glare.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. What's next? Are we almost done? It sounds like I'm whinging heaps. I hope I don't sound like I'm whinging.
Everyone sounds like that when they talk about their job.
Oh, fuck.
Like, I generally whinge about being a chef.
Like, but the thing is that I have so much to be grateful for. I have so much to be grateful for and happy about when it comes to what I've done for the last 5 years. Like, firstly, it's interesting. Like, I've been so captivated by what I've been doing, and I've been like welcomed into these hospitality communities that I would never have an entry into unless I worked in that hospitality community. So like, I'm friends with all these people that work in the hospitality industry in Wollongong now just because I did that book. You know, like, I've met so many awesome people, and I continue to learn so much about food. Like, food is my passion. That's why I do these books, and that's why I've been working in food forever. So like, to be able to keep within the industry and to keep learning about it and stuff, but not be a chef and not work in hospitality is a pretty awesome position to be in.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. Like, I absolutely love that. And taking photos of food, I love it. Like, it's
what a lot of people want to do. Like, a lot of people really love food, really love like wine, and they want to be in the hospitality industry. But the thought of being a chef or front of house or a winemaker is a pretty big ask. So I think it's an enviable position in some ways. So you get to work with, you know, with chefs, with restaurants, with food, but, you know, not to do the fucking shit kicker work, mate.
That's it. Yeah, like, I don't, I, you know, it's always easy to forget how awesome of a position you're actually in. Like being my own boss for the last 5 years, making these books and not having to answer to people and being able to make my own decisions on what I do and when I do it and things like that is an awesome position to be in. And in making these books, it's fantastic. Like, I have got nothing to complain about. And then when it comes to making the books as well, it's like I sound like quite cynical. And I guess most of the cynicism comes from the fact that it's not like a hugely like lucrative business.
Yeah.
Like, if I was out there to make like hundreds of thousands of dollars every year, like this isn't the place I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it through regional publishing. It doesn't matter how big it scale. Like, you can't scale it to a big enough point where you're going to be making like $500,000 a year. It's just not how it works. So like that's part of where the cynicism comes from. But like it's. Yeah, it's such a privileged position to be in. And then I also get this thing where, like, this happens all the time where people are like, I've seen your book. Like, when people learn that I'm the guy from the book, like people introduce me as the guy from the book. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he's the guy that did the book. And he's the guy that did the book. And then people are like, oh, I gave that book to my mum for Christmas. She loves it.
Yeah.
And, like, countless times that's happened to me. When people are like, oh, and, like, people I've never met before that are like, oh, you did the Illawarra cookbook. Yeah, I give that to all my friends as gifts. They love it. Like, and stuff like that. That type of feedback is so cool. And like, you know that as a chef, you know, like if people had met you and had been to Caveau, but like didn't know that you were the chef at Caveau, and like, oh, yeah, we go there. They love that. Like, oh, and stuff like that.
Most of the time.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, it's that sort of feedback that's awesome. And it's like for every like cynical part and for every time that you sort of think, oh, like, fuck, I really care about this way more than everyone else. Like, I think there's that thing where, like, no matter, like, if you're into something or if it's your job or if it's something that you're doing or a project that you're doing, you obviously care about it and you're way more into it than other people. And you, like, sometimes think to yourself, like, oh, do people, like, actually fucking give a shit? Like, am I caring about this just way too much and I just don't need to care about it as much as I do? But then, like, for every time that you think like that, there's, like, another person that goes, oh, I bought that book and it's great. Or like, oh, like, you know, it's sure. awesome. Like, and then like I got someone told me a story that they like, they were, I sold the Capital cookbook to embassies in Canberra. That was one of my clients. Like all these embassies who would give it to people who were visiting from their like home countries and stuff like that. And I'd get stories of them being given to like foreign dignitaries, like the Prime Minister of here, or like this was given to, like one of them was given to Gough Whitlam at a ceremony, like in a place and stuff like that. And I was like, that's fucking cool. Like,
yeah, that's sick.
Yeah. Like, so, yeah, it's all that sort of stuff that like, that makes it awesome and makes it worth it. And I'm definitely in a very, very privileged and awesome position to be able to do that and to be able to do that for the last 5 years and somehow make a living off it. And not mop floors in greasy kitchens.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I think we'll leave it there. It's a good chat. I feel informed.
Yeah. That was fucking, it took a while, but I don't know. Finally, we got it all off the chest and off the table.
It's
and
out there now. Everyone it's out knows. There.
People know what quicksand food actually is.
Finally know what you do.
All right.
Be like, what does Steph do?
Listen to this podcast.
Yeah, you'll know.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, everyone.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's Simon_Evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.